Welcome to the ABCs of the Bible, a radio ministry dedicated to bringing you the Word of God. God promises that when His Word goes forth, it won't come back void, but will accomplish that which He pleases.
Greetings, friends, and welcome back to your participation in Job's trial against God. Of course, your part in this trial is to be the judge, and we are supposed to judge whether or not God is guilty as charged. And right now, actually, God is cross-examining Job. And so God is asking Job the question, do you understand the snow, the rain, the thunder, and the lightning? This cross-examination is happening in Job chapter 38, and we're going to start reading in verse 22. This is Job chapter 38. We're going to start reading in verse 22. God is asking Job, have you entered into the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have kept for the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? How is it the way the light is distributed, and how does the east wind spread itself on the earth? Who has cut a channel for the flood, or a way for the thunder claps, to cause rain to fall on the earth where no man is, a wilderness and no man in it, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the source of grass to spring forth? Has the rain a father? Or who has brought forth the drops of dew? Out of whose womb came the ice and the frost of the heavens? Who fathered it? The waters are hidden like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can you lift up your voice to the clouds, so that floods of water may cover you? Can you send lightnings, that you may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts, or who has given understanding to the mind? Who can number the clouds by wisdom, or who can empty out the jars of the heavens, when the dust is melted into hardness, and the clods cling fast together? Man, that's a lot of questions that God asked Job. And we should ask ourselves the same question whenever we doubt God's wisdom or God's divine providence as it pertains to us. We might think that it's best for God to do such and such, but we always have to remember, God, nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. Because God's ways are so far above our ways and past finding out. We always have to humble ourselves under the mighty and loving hand of our Heavenly Father. And now God goes on to question Job about the science of astronomy. And I'm not talking about the hocus pocus of astrology, trying to see what our sign is and what it's going to tell us for today. No, the stars don't have any power over us like that. God has power over us, and God has power over the stars. So we're talking about the science of astronomy. Yes, it's okay to look up into the sky and say that here's the constellation of Orion, or here is the constellation of Sagittarius. It's okay to do that, but then not to ascribe any power to them, such as to say, well, I was born as a Leo, therefore my traits are such and such. No, that's ridiculous. That's ludicrous. God has fashioned us the way that He wants us, not according to the stars, the way that the stars want us. They have no consciousness, no intelligence, no power over us whatsoever. So I'm talking about the science of astronomy, not the hocus pocus of astrology. So this is in verses 31 through 33. Can you bind the bands of Pleiades, or loose the cords of Orion? Can you bring the constellations in their season, or can you guide the bear with its sons? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set up their rulership on the earth? Of course, none of us can do that, and Job couldn't do that. Now God goes on to talk about how He provides food for the entire food chain. This is in verse 39 through 41, verses 39 through 41. Will you hunt the prey for the lion, or fill the appetite of the young lions? When they crouch in dens and sit in the cover of their hiding place, can you provide food for them? Who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and wander about without food? Now think about this. You have a lion, which is a huge carnivore. Well, what about if a lion had, let's say, 50 or 30 cubs and all of them grew into adulthood? That would overwhelm the lower part of the food chain. The other animals would be wiped out. So God, in his omniscience, knowing all things, created lions to have only a few pups. And even then, some of those pups don't survive. But that's so that there aren't so many lions around that it would wipe out the lower food chain, and then the animal world would become extinct. No, God is wonderful in his design. And God has designed unique natures in various animals, instilling the perfect intelligence and instincts in all living creatures so that there's a perfect balance on the earth. And of course, only we as mankind, the highest of God's creation, only we have destroyed things, unfortunately. But if you look at nature, there's a perfect balance. And God talks about that. And this is in Job chapter 39. And now we're going to read verses 1 through 30 of Job chapter 39 to see how God has instilled intelligence and instincts in all living creatures. He's asking Job, "Do you know the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Can you observe the calving of deer? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time for their bearing, when they bow down and bring forth, they send out their pangs?" And think about that. If you study nature, you'll see that animals bring forth their young at a time when there's an abundance of food, say for instance in the springtime and going into the summertime. They do that because God has put a certain intelligence in them and has put in a certain gestation period in them so that they know that right after they come out of winter and they're coming into spring, they need to be giving birth to their young ones in order to give them the best chance of surviving. So therefore, you back it up a bit and say, they know when their mating season is. God has put that type of intelligence in animals. We haven't done that and couldn't begin to do that. And now in verse 4, "Their young ones are strong. They multiply with grain," because they have grain to eat. "They go forth and do not return to them again. Who has sent out the wild ass free? Or who has loosed the bands of the wild ass, to whom I have assigned the wilderness for its home and the salt land for its dwellings? He scorns the turmoil of the city. He does not hear the driver's shouts. He seeks out mountains for his pasture and searches after every green thing. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you or spend the night by your feeding trough? Can you tie the wild ox in the furrow with his rope, or will he harrow the valleys for you? Will you trust him because he has great strength, or will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him that he will return your seed and gather it to your grain floor?" So we have two different animals there. He's talking about the wild ox here, and then previous to that, he was talking about the wild ass, where the wild ass eats things out in the wilderness, and God has made them ideally to dwell there, and they know where their dwelling is. They know where it's best for them to be. And then God has put a different nature in the wild ox, such that they're not to be domesticated animals, and we don't dare try that. We've learned our lesson. Then God goes on to talk about the ostrich. And he says, "The wing of the ostrich beats joyously, though not like the stork's wings for flight." God has made different birds to have different natures and different characteristics. In verse 14 now, "For she leaves her eggs to the earth and lets them warm in the dust and forgets that a foot may crush them or that the beast of the field may break them. She treats her young roughly as if they are not hers, for her labor is vanity without fear, because God has caused her to forget wisdom, and he has not given her a share in understanding. At the time she lifts herself up on high, she scorns the horse and its rider." So God is saying that he's created an ostrich, and a stork is different from an ostrich. An ostrich is kind of a foolish animal. It gives birth to young, and then it just leaves it. But a stork is different from that. You heard about the stork actually carrying young. So God has given them different natures. Now God is about to talk about the horse. And this is in verse 19. Have you given the horse strength? Have you closed his neck with a mane? Can you make him leap like a locust? The glory of his snorting is terrifying. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet the weapons. He mocks at fear and is not terrified, and he does not turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and the shield. He swallows the ground with quivering and rage, and he does not stand still at the sound of the trumpet. When the trumpet sounds, he says, "Aha! Aha! It's time for me to run into battle." He smells the battle from afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. So it's wise for us to use a horse in battle. I mean, who would go to battle on a sheep? A sheep doesn't have the same nature as a horse. A sheep would run scared in a second, but a horse just runs fearlessly into battle. And that's the different natures that God has made in different animals. He's given them that type of intelligence, that type of instinct. And now in verse 26, it says, "Does the hawk soar by your understanding? Will he spread his wings toward the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make his nest on high? He lives and stays on the rock, on the crag of the rock, and the strong place. For there he seeks food, and his eyes see afar off. And his young brood also sucks up blood. And where the dead are, there he is." God has given the hawk and the eagle certain talents that they fly high, high in the heavens. And then there are other birds that barely fly above the treetops. And then there are some birds that don't fly at all. That's the intelligence, the creativity, the beauty, the majesty, the glory of God. We cannot touch God. And that's how God is addressing Job, saying, "Job, you can't touch this. Job, you can't touch this. Get out of here, Job." Well, I must get out of here also because my time is up. Thank you for joining me on this program. I hope you'll be back for the next program, and may God be in you. 666, the mark of the beast. What is the mark of the beast? Before you can know for sure what is the mark of the beast, you must know for sure the identity of the beast. Right from the pages of your own Bible, I will first reveal to you the identity of the beast, and secondly reveal to you what is the mark of the beast. I will do this during a free seminar entitled, "What is the Mark of the Beast?" This free seminar will be held on Wednesday, February 14th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the North Lake Barbara Lohr Library, which is located at 3772 La Vista Road in Tucker, Georgia. For more information, call 404-412-0032 or log on to our website at www.christianambassadors.org. Please, don't miss this extremely important seminar, or you may end up receiving the mark of the beast. Many people will receive the mark of the beast in order to escape the great tribulation, which is Satan's wrath against the people of God. But those who receive the mark of the beast will not escape the day of the Lord, which is God's wrath against the people of disobedience. He that has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches.